Hello. On this podcast, we talk about movies, their faults, their flaws, and their plots. So, expect some spoilers.
You've been warned.
Welcome to Plot Spackle.
I'm John, and I got caught by the law because when I tried to steal some clothes to change my appearance, they were too small.
I'm Eric, and apparently my Mexican Spanish isn't good enough to get me over the border.
I'm Richard. It turns out if you have highly identifiable red hair, have to have glasses to see things, and I'm asthmatic, so you can't run away really well, you don't last long running from the law. Who knew?
I mean, so while we're running from the law, guys, what are we going to use to fill in these plot holes?
Abandoned Department of Illinois correctional facility jumpsuits.
Maybe some leg irons with no legs in them. Well, I prefer outhouses, doghouses, just whatever's in the area.
In a 5-mile radius.
And roadblocks at 15.
Roadblocks at 15, because today we are talking about The Fugitive. And we're gonna protect this movie because it is a great movie.
It was a very good film.
So, Eric, you watched this movie. You watched this before we showed it to you. This was one that you knew. So why don't you tell us and the audience what this movie is about?
Well, can do, guys. The Fugitive is a movie about redemption. Dr. Richard Kimball is wrongfully convicted of murdering his wife. On his way to prison, he is able to escape and start to clear his name. However, the good doctor is doggedly pursued by the U.S. Marshal, Sam Girard. Girard will stop at nothing to get his man, and he doesn't care if Richard is innocent or not. Over the course of a couple months...
I think you're thinking of the TV series here, Eric. We're doing the Harrison Ford film.
Yeah, it takes a couple months.
It does take a couple months.
Of him being on the run?
Yes.
Yeah. His hair is able to grow out from being dyed to natural color again. But anyways, over the course of a couple months, Dr. Kimball is able to piece together who framed him and murdered his wife, ultimately clearing his name.
I think that was a very concise and accurate description of the movie.
Wow, wow, wow.
A first time ever on,
no, not,
on this podcast.
I'm pretty sure I did a pretty concise and informative Temple of Doom synopsis.
So when Harrison Ford isn't the subject of the matter, we can trust in Eric.
Maybe.
Can I tell you a little secret, guys?
You have a man crush on Harrison Ford?
Yes. Well, I guess it's not really a secret. I mean, and plus it's Harrison Ford.
Yeah, not a secret at all. But now let's talk about movie facts. Facts about the movie from Richard, who apparently hadn't seen the movie before.
I had not.
Which was the surprising movie fact to me.
Yep.
I just assumed.
How did you make it out of the 90s not seeing that movie? It's like everywhere.
I had a little sister born like shortly. Let's see. Because this was released in August of 93. Yeah, within 6 months. And little sisters ruin like having your family go to things when you're 10. Sorry. But that's all right.
Ruin everything.
The movie itself opened on August 8th, 1993. Had a $44 million budget, earned $23 million of that back that opening weekend. The U.S. ended up grossing $183 million, and worldwide was $368 million. So,
a success.
A success. It remains to this day the only movie based off of a TV show to be nominated for Best Picture.
It won an Oscar, didn't it? Which one did it win?
Tommy Lee Jones won Best Actor in a Supporting Role.
Yeah, I buy that.
And the train and bus are actually still available, and you can go and see them in the town of Dillsboro, North Carolina, because they wrecked it for real and left it there, because you don't unwreck trains super easy.
You cannot unwreck that train.
And then the film was successful, and so they're like, you know what? Maybe people will want to see this. And so they left it there.
As a tourist trap.
Well, it was a prisoner trap, too, but luckily most of them
No, the prisoners got out, so it wasn't a very good trap, was it? It
wasn't even a death trap. But there you go. There's some interesting facts about The Fugitive for you.
Here's another interesting fact. There is a real case that inspired the story of The Fugitive.
Do tell.
Of a doctor who was accused of killing his wife, and he blamed a mysterious figure instead, and he was convicted, but then the conviction was overturned because there was just too much weird stuff going on.
It was slightly less exciting than the film or TV show.
Yeah, he didn't go on the run or anything.
But it is more based on a true story than most things that are based on a true story.
Did you guys know that The Blob from 1953 was based on a true story?
Like I said.
And that is a true fact. Just FYI, listeners.
That is a movie fact.
Not even a rock fact.
Not even a rock fact. So, we have plot holes for this movie. I mean, it's great and all, and an absolute blast to watch, and the soundtrack's pretty good, but apparently there are plot holes, and that's what we're here for, everyone. We're here to destroy these plot holes.
So we are getting the plot holes from moviemistakes.com and our favorite go-to, IMDb.
Because it's easy.
Well, having a database of like movie facts does make it easy. It's like literally what databases are for, finding information.
Our first plot hole, when Kimball is heading towards the dam driving the ambulance in the tunnel, his lane is empty in the wide angles. Yet in the close-ups, he is swerving the steering wheel violently as if there were cars ahead. This keeps changing back and forth. It adds up for tension, but is totally ludicrous.
So, me and John actually made sure that we went through all of these plot holes before we watched it. And so, we paid pretty close attention to all of this throwing that wheel around that Harrison Ford is doing. And anytime he is swerving that thing, there is another vehicle on screen.
Yep, there is something that he is trying to get around.
They just weren't paying a whole lot of attention.
I mean, he passes by him pretty quickly.
It's almost like he was speeding.
See, that's a lot better than my my fix for that plot hole. Those 1990 courier vans were just death traps. The steering was horrible on them.
That's also true.
And I know because I used to drive one for work, so...
See, and I was... Like, if there weren't just actual other cars on screen, I was just going to go, well, it's got bad alignment. You just have to do that to try and adjust so that your car, the van's going vaguely straight.
Bad alignment and no power steering.
Yeah. But, no, it turns out there's actually just cars he's trying to avoid. And the person who put the plot hole wasn't paying attention. Too bad. So we'll move on to a different plot hole. Over on IMDb, we have, when the guard from the bus is interviewed, he claims to have somehow thrown his partner out of the bus before the train hit it. But the other guard hasn't yet been discovered alive.
You know what's great about partners who haven't been found alive? You can totally try and save their life as many times as you want, and it doesn't matter. Because if they're not found alive, well, you tried, and there's no one to say that your story is a lie, and you're just trying to make yourself look great. And if they survive, well, now you're really a hero.
So at this point in the movie, had they confirmed how many prisoners had died in the bus?
No, he is telling the story right before the U.S. Marshals show up and they find the leg arms.
Yep. It's just him talking to the local police and the news.
See, what I can't quite remember the order of the scene, but I remember they say there's four confirmed dead. So if that was before the guy was already explaining what he did, maybe he had to account for why his partner wasn't among the dead. So obviously I threw him out and tried to save his life because he would have done that for me.
Yeah. Like I feel like it's mostly he's pumping himself up. You say like, look, I'm this great guy. I saved my friend. I didn't totally just leave him to die in the bus.
All right.
So next plot hole. When Kimball and Nichols fight right after the speech is interrupted, Kimball tosses him out a door onto an exterior balcony. The door uses ordinary fire panic hardware, push to open. The door should swing inward. That kind of door is always used to move toward a fire exit. A balcony is not an exit unless the fire marshal expects you to jump off.
So first off, the door swings outward, not inward. Second, it goes to the roof.
Well, and that's one of those, like that's why they're saying is the door's supposed to swing inward because you're supposed to go inside to get to your fire exit in case there's a fire.
Instead of out to the fire escapes.
Out to the fire escapes that you can access from the roof. Instead of the presidential suite, which you'd either be using the staircases internally, which I suppose you could go for, or the elevators, which you're not supposed to use during a fire.
Or you go outside and maybe a helicopter comes, picks you up because you're so far off the ground, that's the easier way to get out of a fire situation.
That is also a possibility, yes. There were a lot of different places those stairs went in the wide-angle shot.
And given their preference for practicality on this, I believe that is literally the actual layout of that building.
They did do a lot of just, we're going to use this for things in this film.
All right. So our final listed plot hole. When Kimball is at the hospital helping the little boy, Samuel Gerard and his men are in his rented room, having discovered where he's living now. However, the following scene shows Kimball at the Richard Daley Plaza the next day. It's never explained why Kimball didn't return to his room for the hospital that night, or where he spent the night, since he'd obviously have been caught if he did return.
I'm just going to say this is probably due to weird editing.
See, and I've got a couple different things on this. One, the police had already been to his apartment. While they weren't there to arrest him, they were arresting someone who had gotten a good look at him. We are told repeatedly that he is supposed to be a smart character. And, you know, if somebody knows who you are and they're like, hey, maybe I can get the cops to give me leniency, you might realize this guy's going to sell you out to get his own to save himself. So your location is no longer safe. So don't go back there. Two, we don't know how long he was doing stuff in the hospital. There's a lot of cutaways. Sure, he spent some time helping the boy, but he had to try and find a different exit after all of that stuff, and there were cops all over with different media things, so he had to find a different exit to go somewhere. We don't know how long that took. We just get a cutaway.
Yeah, and we know that the helping the boy is after he's done the long research session, where he's narrowed down his, like, results to 5 people.
Yeah, and I'd assume that he's doing the research at night, and then when you see, like, him looking outside, it's daylight again, so it's probably the next day already when he's helping the boy.
And then the hunt was on, and we do see at one point him walking away from a motel within the next sequence of shots. So I'm assuming, yeah, he decided not to go back to that room. Because he'd gotten what he needed. He'd made his fake ID, and he was on the move. Gotta keep moving. That's the secret.
That makes sense to me. It's a lot better than mine. So that's all of the listed plot holes. But, John, you brought one up in our pregame session. Yeah. What was your plot hole?
All right, so we have Nichols as our bad guy, right?
Yes.
And his whole thing was he had this whole plan to make a lot of money off of this drug that didn't actually work, and they had to falsify information to get it passed, and that's why he tried to have Kimball killed, because I think that's the true story, is Kimball was supposed to be killed by the one-armed man, but he got called in for emergency surgery, so he wasn't home when he was supposed to be. But Nichols helps Kimball find out this whole plot that was going on. He gave him information and direction. Like, he knows what the real story is. So when he helps out Kimball and lets him get into the hospital to look up the liver samples and calls ahead to the other doctors to let him know Kimball's coming, why is he doing this? He's the villain.
So I put it down that he's not at, like, he's quote-unquote helping him, but you have his super smug moment when he's talking to the police about, oh no, Dr. Richard Kimball is even smarter than I am. Which he clearly does not believe, because otherwise he wouldn't be doing any of this. The next is, obviously he thinks he's smarter than both Kimball and the law. And so Kimball can go and, like, dig around and whatever, and he'll get caught by the cops. And the deal's almost all the way through anyway. It's just, it keeps all of the police focused on this. It's very exciting. And Richard sees him as a good guy, and the police see him as, you know, a loyal friend.
Another thing, too. So, we find out that Nichols is the bad guy, and we find that out because he has ordered Sykes to go and kill Dr. Richards, but, you know, they're living in the city of Chicago. You know, that's a pretty big city. If only there was a way to make sure that Dr. Kimball was in a specific spot, or maybe in a building.
Or, like, would tell you where he is, because he trusts you. It is, again, almost like he's playing the long game here. And as soon as he finds out that Richard Kimball actually has any kind of evidence, that's when he sends Sykes to kill him. It's while he's just running around, running from the law, it's not a problem. As soon as he goes, oh yeah, I can trace everything back to this guy. Oh, well, you meet me here. Go to this place. And then suddenly there's a phone call to Mr. Sykes.
See, that's the one I agree with, was because there is that change in how Nichols reacts to the police or the U.S. Marshals, is because before, when Kimball came to him for help, he was totally open about the fact that he had had contact with Kimball. Because, you know, if they catch him, then his plot is never found. But then later, when Kimball's like, oh, I have information, and I think I'm going to blow this wide open, now he lies because he doesn't want Kimball to be caught. Because even if it's considered, you know, as ranting and raving about the conspiracy theory with the one-armed man, there might be enough truth in it to get it investigated, and then he's all out. So he needs to take care of it quietly with Sykes before the cat's out of the bag, as it were. Are there any other plot holes, the little things we want to talk about?
I mean, I think there would be, just because this movie had a couple script revisions, and that's just going to cause some inconsistencies throughout the entire movie, but I think they did a good job of at least tying it together.
Well, and a lot of the script revisions, when you dig into the things about the film, were the fact that there was almost no pre-written dialogue for the film itself, and that they did several takes of most of the scenes and then went with what they felt like, and that became the official script. Like,
so there was ad-libbed bits. So a lot of Tommy Lee Jones phrases as Samuel Gerard is off the cuff.
Yeah, well, like, for instance, the scene when he's in the viaduct about to jump off the dam, and there's the, I didn't kill my wife, I don't care. He was, like, they did have a little bit of scripting. It was supposed to say, that's not my problem. But Tommy Lee Jones didn't like it. He wants the, I don't care, and they changed it to that, because that's what Tommy Lee Jones felt his character would say, and felt had more punch to it.
And it is an iconic line, actually. Let him follow his gut, and worked.
And I mean, how many times has that line been parodied?
A lot. And then, like, the entire scene with the St. Patrick's Day parade was completely unscripted. They just put Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones in the crowd at the actual thing, St. Patrick's Day parade, with the permission of the mayor, and had people with hand cams following them around.
Yeah, that's the actual Irish parade. So it's not a...
Yeah, it's not a staged parade. That's the actual Chicago St. Patrick's Day parade. And they just had... Just go for it. And, like, Harrison Ford actually felt... You know, he did a pretty good job. Because it took, like... 10 or 15 minutes before somebody figured out that it was Harrison Ford running through the crowd. So a lot of the script revisions are them changing things on set during filming. So while there's a lot of dialogue changes, there wasn't a whole lot of plot overall changes.
Richard, how angry do you want to be, since you're our resident Scott?
Why am I angry?
Well, the Irish are stealing the Highland bagpipes.
Oh, yeah.
Like the thieves they are. I was watching that, I'm like, that's Scottish, and that's a Scottish kilt.
Well, there are Irish tartans, but...
And I actually looked it up. That is not an Irish tartan color.
It is not. If you check on the drums, it is a Scottish piping crew.
They're just there for the...
They're there to be part of the parade.
Yeah.
So I was just, you know, since Scots are angry, I was thinking maybe Richard wants to be angry on the podcast.
This is not Mission Impossible. This is The Fugitive. He has no hatred of The Fugitive because he did not watch either the movie or the series.
Nope.
He didn't even know it was a series. Either.
I didn't even know it was a TV series until you said it. Said anything or said stuff about it, Eric.
So, yeah, we are. I guess this is an unofficial continuation of the...
It's an TV unofficial series? Continuation of the TV series miniseries and a Richard Lived Under a Rock.
So, I guess we should maybe move into... what did you think of the movie, Richard?
It was good. I enjoyed it.
Like, do you think you missed out because you didn't watch it when it was really in the zeitgeist?
I mean, I missed a lot of Tommy Lee Jones references throughout the rest of my life because I didn't realize they were parodying The Fugitive. So, I mean, there is that. But now I retroactively know it, and when I watch other things that I love and see them reference it, I can go, aha.
Aha, that's where it comes from.
So what was your favorite part?
Favorite part? Well, I'd say probably my favorite part was a lot of him going into the hospital, because we live in a very different world now, and a lot of that would not work. But it was interesting to go, no, that totally would have worked back in 1993. And so it was just kind of interesting to look back on a world where security was so much more lax.
Well, I mean, hadn't figured out, like, hacking whole thing with that, how to be more secure with your databases.
Yeah, digital security was not a concern in that hospital.
I mean, you could hack things by whistling at once upon a time.
Heck yeah, yeah, freaking was amazing.
Thanks to a Captain Crunch whistle, or a whistle that was given out in a Captain Crunch box. And I don't even think they would have had internet at this time in 1993. I mean, it obviously was a thing, but I don't think internet got popular until the late 90s.
Well, it wasn't something you'd really have in your home at that time period. I think, for instance, that the hospital was probably had an internet connection that specifically to connect to other hospitals.
Yeah, for medical records, medical database. But a lot of that they wouldn't have had. And then just how, again, I don't know. Maybe it's that easy to find a place to rent in Chicago where you can just walk around and find somebody who's willing to let you live in their basement.
For cash.
All right, Richard, what was your least favorite part?
Least favorite?
That's hard. I can say none of the above.
I mean, I was not a fan of the original police chief who was investigating it, because even after he was consistently proved wrong, he was still belligerent and angry and convinced that he was right, despite being wrong 3 or 4 times in a row.
I was going to suggest that if you didn't think of anything. I hated those police officers.
Like, that's... just bad policing.
I think my least favorite part is when the other U.S. Marshal gets conked in the head by that rack. Like,
the freaking I-beam?
Yeah, the I-beam. Like, I'm like, oh, that had to hurt.
Well, he did come out, like, with a neck brace and like, yeah, did he?
Bandages.
I think he had oxygen, too.
Well, yeah, he was bandaged up good. And I'm like, that's a realistic take, but that was, oh, that had to hurt. Now here's a question for you. All right, so you both seen Boondock Saints, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So do you think Samuel Gerard would have been better at catching the Boondock Saints than the detective in that movie? One but played by William Dafoe? Like, if we swapped, would Dafoe be able to catch the fugitive? And would Gerard be able to catch the Boondock Saints?
You know, I'm going to put down that I don't think that they would have caught the other person's criminal, because Dafoe is willing to look at things and just go, no, we're going to go with the completely absurd solution, where Samuel Gerard is, nope, we go with it. Like, this is the one that makes sense, that we don't have bodies. This didn't happen. We don't have that, where like random people drop, like, he's not going to look at a crime scene and go, yes, people fell through a vent, were held up by ropes, spun around, shot everybody in the room. That's not on his list of this is a thing that would have happened.
You think Gerard would have walked off that case?
I think so.
I think Gerard would have just... Sorry, someone flushed a toilet, so... Let me just wait for that sound. I think Gerard would have... Like, it would have stuck in the back of his mind if he couldn't solve it. And just, he wouldn't let go. He would try and find them eventually, but who knows when that is.
Question is, would he have been able to prevent the Blues Brothers from saving the orphanage?
Yes. Samuel Gerard is more dangerous than Carrie Fisher with a bazooka.
So Richard, we learned that this was your first time. John, when did you first see The Fugitive?
I can't say exactly when, but it has been a fixture in my home because my parents really liked it. And so I think we had... trying to think if the VHS version we had was actually originally a copy of it, or was one of the recordings from when it showed on the TV, because it was popular. Now, I don't remember seeing the whole thing early on, because I think they tend to play it late at night, and so, you know, you have to go to bed before we actually get to the climax. But I remember really clearly the whole opening sequence.
Yeah, I would have, so in my home it was definitely a fixture as well, but we definitely had the first release of the VHS, so I've probably saw it when I was 6 or 7. Let's see, what else should we talk about, guys, about The Fugitive?
I don't know. I mean, it's great. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. Don't be like Richard. I mean, he probably didn't realize he was missing out.
No, well, it was a movie. It's not that I avoided it.
No. Just how some movies are.
Sometimes you just don't get around to a movie when it's popular, and then it's been too long and you don't want to say anything, or else people will judge you. Or maybe make podcast episodes out of it.
I mean, it's not like I deliberately was like, nope, I can't watch it now. It's been too long.
It's just, yeah, it doesn't come up. It's not like people are like, well, let's go watch The Fugitive now. Hey, you want to come over and watch The Fugitive?
And then I have to go, no, I can't. I've never seen it, and I hold that as a torch of my life. No, it was just let's watch The Fugitive. Okay. And then we finished watching it, and I was like, huh, that's the first time I've ever seen that film.
I was like, what? I just assumed it. Just assumed that he'd seen The Fugitive.
But that's why there's Eric lives under a rock, and not Richard lives under a rock.
Because I hold my badge of ignorance with pride.
Yep. And I'm just like, oh, cool. Yeah, let's go watch that.
And it's easily measurable, your ignorance and your pride. They're on the same database spreadsheet we have.
Pivot tables and everything.
Yeah.
There's percentages.
It has, like, color coding and everything. Easily made into bar charts.
All right, but, yeah, I think we might just be done. I mean, we're kind of in the rambling point, so we should probably figure out how to end this. It can't go on forever.
Well... a good way to end would be to thank our patron members.
Oh, we should do that. If any of you claimed that a one-armed man killed your wife, I'd believe you. Because
significant other. I'm just going to say most of our We don't know how our patrons swing, and we don't care about those things.
We just care that they support us and make this whole thing possible, especially recording remotely. That's really what made this possible.
So thank you, patron members.
Now, if you haven't seen The Fugitive, you should go out and do it, and then tell us if you liked it or not on Facebook. Or if there's another movie you really like you think Richard maybe haven't seen, and then we'll never know until after we've watched it.
Or if you've got a movie that you think Richard nor Eric have seen, send us a shout out on Twitter at @PlotSpacklePodcast.
I think it's @PlotSpacklePod.
It might be. Send us a shout out at @PlotSpacklePod.
Or if you would like to use one of those archaic methods like email, you can send us an email at plotspacklepodcast@gmail.com. And let us know, what's your crazy theory on why the one-armed man didn't really kill his wife, even though we know he did?
Also,
or maybe just send us a theory on why you'd send a one-armed man to kill anyone.
Well, that was
the only assassin he knew.
Maybe I'm just being ableist here, but
John,
I feel like you have some limitations.
He didn't have a large pool of assassins to work with.
I mean, you can't use a rifle. So you're left with a handgun. Yeah,
you can. You definitely can use a rifle. He can still support it on his nub.
But that is not what we're here to talk about. While we have an argument over whether or not you can be a one-armed assassin, have a good night, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next time.
I mean, this fist fight, he's down at least one hook. Though I guess his other hand could literally be a hook.
It's called the left hook for a reason, John.
Though, and also you could pull your arm off and beat someone with the arm.